Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, one of the guys who joined Dennis as part of the November 9 in 2008, Chino Ream. Also, Gavin Griffin, who at one point was the youngest player to ever win a bracelet at the World Series of Poker. A record that, of course, has since been broken by Peter Eastgate and last year by Joe Catta. Hello, I'm Paul Harrah's here at Harrah's in St. Louis, while Dennis Phillips is at the Rio in Las Vegas, where you're playing in yet another World Series of Poker event. Hi, Bracelet Hunter. How are you?
That's a good way to put it. I'm doing well. I stepped away from the table for this. This is the triple chance, they call it. You get 3,000 in chips to start with and two little markers for 3,000 apiece. You can cash at any time. So the different philosophies. You can sit down and immediately cash them and start with 9,000. You can hold them back and see what the first level or two bring. By the end of the fourth level, though, you have to have them cashed in, and from then on it's just normal play.
So you could treat it like a rebuy tournament where, as you say, you bust out and then you just rebuy, or you could start with the larger stack of chips. And what did you do?
Actually, I started with just 3,000. I don't want to be cold decked or have somebody suck out on me at the beginning. That's already happened a couple of times. And in the first 15 minutes of play, I've already doubled up to a little over 6,000. I still got my two markers, so I'm in good shape right now.
Very nice. Well, yeah, wherever I go here in St. Louis to play poker, whether it's at Harrah's or someplace else, or wherever I travel to, or whenever I talk to poker players, they're constantly asking me, how is Dennis doing? Now, we didn't get an update from you last week because you were playing in the NHL Shootout, a charity event. But overall, how have you been doing in the 3 weeks since you got back from Peru and to the Rio for the World Series?
Well, I've made new friends. I've enjoyed myself. But it probably would have been better to go on a two-week vacation to Hawaii.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not been good poker result-wise. But, you know, you have these cold streaks. And maybe today will be different. We'll see. I've gotten it in with the best hand the majority of the time. Twice I've had my aces cracked on an all-in preflop to eliminate me from a tournament. Just, you know, stuff like that happens.
In fact, you told me about a brutal beat with aces this weekend.
Oh, that one was nasty, I have to admit. In the one tournament, about level five, I still just got about starting chips, so the average has creeped up quite a bit. I'm not short stacked, but I'm not in the best of shape. Pre-flop, I looked down at an ace-10 suited. They're both hearts. So I raised, and a gentleman re-raised me. I went ahead and smooth called it and waited for the flop. Flop was a 10 rag rainbow out there. So I made a bet. He immediately shoved for probably 3 to 4 times what was in the pot. Massive shove. I had maybe 20% of my chips in there was all. I thought about it and thought about it and said, this is just ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. What two cards would you possibly do it with? Perhaps if he had jacks and wanted to eliminate it. But it just didn't make sense. So I called him. And he proudly turned over a jack 9 offsuit.
On a flop of 10-6-5.
10-6-5, yes. So he had a jack high nothing is what he had at the time. I had top pair plus top kicker.
Yep.
And he assumed he was drawing to a 3-outer. He was wrong. Because when the queen came on the turn and the 8 on the river to give him the straight, it was amazing.
Wow. Wow. And that on top of another one, the one I was going to ask you about was the one where your aces got busted by, what was it, King 8 with the guy who made the
King 8
high straight?
Yeah, King 8 offsuit. Yeah.
You know, last year you didn't have a great run in the early part of the series, and then when it came time for the main event, you had a fantastic run and went to 45th before taking that unbelievable Ace King versus Ace King four-flush bad beat. So, you know, maybe all of this is just a prelude to fantastic stuff next week.
Well, we can hope so, that's for sure. I will admit that if I get taken out with pocket aces versus a king eight offsuit, it will make the ESPN show probably. But I don't think I want it to.
I don't think you do either. Well, they're getting down to the end. The event that Dennis is playing in today is event number 51 out of 57. It's hard to believe that it's come this far already. There'll be a no-limit hold'em six-handed event tomorrow with a 25K buy-in, which people are talking about being one of the premier events of this series. It will not be televised, although I understand ESPN3 is going to be covering it online. Are you going to play in that six-handed 25K event?
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully I'm in day two of the one that I'm playing right now. Mm-hmm. If I get knocked out of it, yes, I will be playing it.
Then on Thursday, they're going to have their 1K events, which normally would run on the weekends, but with the 4th of July weekend, they decided to run it on Thursday and Friday for day 1A and 1B, and then the rest of that tournament will run out over the weekend. Also Saturday, the Annie Duke, Don Cheadle, Annie Up for Africa event, all of that is a prelude to the main event, which starts with day 1A on Monday. What is the feeling there about turnout for the main event? How has turnout been in the 51 events thus far?
They're averaging about 17% increase from last year, substantial increase. The side ones, they have a nightly 7 o'clock tournament for $300 buy-in. They have something new they've never done before, too. They have a deep stack that they play at 1 o'clock every day for $200 buy-in. The satellites, they say they're getting more satellite feed and more tables this year than last year. So the entire play here, number-wise, is up.
Nice.
That being the case, a 17% increase over last year's 6,600, you know, you're looking at 7,400 maybe or something. I don't know.
As I recall, my prediction was 7,400. Yours was 7,700. And Jack Effel, who's the tournament director, said 7,000. Of course, some of that will be impacted by the fact that PokerStars, which sent 2,000 last year, is only sending 875 because they have been busy qualifying people for their NAPT events and also for the big game, which is on in week number 3. You can still go to PokerStars.net and qualify for the next round, right?
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be continual, and I'm getting tremendous feedback. Some of the shows now have been some of the best poker shows that have been shown. Some of the hands have just been unbelievable. The loose cannons have been interesting, to say the least. But the guy that caught the three out of the four times they ran it against Phil Ivey.
Phil Hellmuth.
Phil Hellmuth. And, it's just been pretty awesome, I have to admit.
This week's loose cannon is a 33-year-old single mom, a hot mom, named Nadia Magnus, and she's taken on Barry Greenstein, Justin Bonomo, Jason Mercier, Joe Catta, and Daniel Alai, and she is by far the most aggressive loose cannon of the three that we've seen so far. When will you be going to a taping session for the next round?
We're taping it right after the World Series is over. Don't have a firm date yet, but it's going to be out here in Vegas. We're going to tape it and have some fun. But
I want to remind our St. Louis listeners that the show is not on Channel 2 here, but you can still see it on thebiggame.pokerstars.net. And we're also asking you to call Channel 2 and ask them to please put it on. The phone number there is 314-213-2222. Ask for the general manager, Spencer Koch. I'm sure he'd love to get your phone call. 314-213-2222. Or go to PokerStars.net and qualify to be on a future big game. I'm kind of rushing here because I want to make sure we get to these interviews with Gavin and Chino. The big news here in St. Louis, Dennis, is that this Thursday, Harrah's goes 24/7.
Wow. Okay, that'll be a change.
For people not from St. Louis, you may not know that the casinos here had to close at 5 o'clock in the morning and then reopen at 8 o'clock on weekdays. On the weekends, they've been 24/7. But as of this Thursday, July 1st, they will be 24/7 except for 1 hour on Wednesday mornings when they have to close down for some computer thing. But other than that, you know, we complained about this when the circuit event was here in April with people from out of town who wondered, what do you mean I have to leave the poker room at 4:30 in the morning? Well, now you won't have to. Starting Thursday, the action will go around the clock 7 days a week.
Wow. No, I didn't know that. And that's a good change.
Yes.
I can remember the guys having to break it at 5 and not being happy. Because actually, you had to break it about 4:30 or even 20 after.
Yep, that's right.
By the time to get everything done.
Absolutely right.
Huge
okay.
Difference.
The other thing I want to mention is for our listeners who download this show via iTunes, last week's show, for some reason, there was a problem. I fixed that problem yesterday, so all of our podcasts are back on there, including today's when it gets on there. And we do have lots and lots of people who are listening to these podcasts, downloading them to their iPods or iPhones and listening to them in the car or wherever.
I've got one quick thing, and then I'm going to have to get back to the table. I was totally amazed. Two gentlemen came up to me a couple of days ago and shook my hand and said they were listening to the podcast. They drove down from Alaska, and they listened to our podcast for 8 straight hours driving down here. Unbelievable.
Wow. I bet you it took them longer than 8 hours to make the drive, but I'm glad that we were able to be with them for part of that.
Oh, they said it made the time fly by.
I bet it did. All right, that's very cool. Go back to the triple chance tournament and do well in this one, and we'll get an update from you on that next week.
You take care now.
All right, now while Dennis is getting off the phone, you will hear him through the remainder of this show because these are interviews that he and I recorded with Gavin Griffin and Chino Ream at the Rio in Las Vegas. We'll come back with Gavin up first, talking about finishing tourneys and his memories of his first World Series of Poker. All of that as the final table continues live from Harrah's St. Louis and the Rio in Las Vegas on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis, this is the radio show where the hosts put their money where their mouths are. Paul Harrah's and Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips are playing in and reporting from the 2010 World Series of Poker at the Rio in Las Vegas. And here they are at the final table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And welcome back to the Dennis Phillips Suite, high atop the Rio, home of the 2010 World Series of Poker. Paul Harrah's sitting here with Dennis and Gavin Griffin, another member of Team Poker Stars Pro, who 6 years ago became the youngest player ever to win a World Series of Poker bracelet. In what event?
That was the $3,000 pot limit hold'em event.
Yeah, so we're not just talking about no limit hold'em, as we are with a lot of our players that we're talking to on this show. They're multiple game players. You play no limit, you play pot limit. What else do you play?
I play pretty much any game. For a while, I was playing the 8-game mix on PokerStars. I've played a lot of triple draw and pretty much everything in the past.
Mm-hmm. Before we talk about this year's series, tell us about your first experience coming to the World Series. We're asking everybody who's here this summer why you decided to come out here, how you got here, and what the experience was like for you.
So I had quit my dealing job. I was dealing for a casino in East Chicago, Indiana. Actually, for a Harrah's Casino in East Chicago, Indiana. And I quit that job, decided to just start playing poker. And I was in Fort Worth, which is where I went to college. I had a bunch of friends in Fort Worth. I was just there for a month, just kind of hanging out, playing online poker, playing the live games around the Dallas area. And one of my friends decided to go to the World Series of Poker. And he said he had a good time. You know, everybody's terrible, blah, blah, blah.
Everybody's terrible.
Yeah, but my friend who went, Dustin, he really thinks everybody's terrible. Like, he doesn't think anybody's good at anything. So he thinks he's the best at everything he's ever done, and he thinks that everybody else is terrible. So
does Phil Helmings happen to give him a child or something here? Or,
So he came back, and he said it was a really cool experience. And I had just done well in some online tournaments, so I decided to get some money offline and head out there. I drove all night, arrived in Vegas around 6 o'clock in the morning. I drove straight through from Dallas.
So you're in top condition.
Yeah. I went to the Bellagio because I didn't want to wake the guy whose house I was going to stay at. I didn't want to wake him up.
Uh-huh.
So I went to the Bellagio for a couple hours, played 15:30, and then called him up around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And went over to his house, crashed for a while, and played my first event the next day. And, you know, did relatively well. And I realized that, you know, not everybody was terrible, but there was some good value in the tournaments.
Yeah. What was the first event?
It was a 1,500 no-limit event. It was just, you know, one of the – back then they didn't have 18 1,500 no-limit events. It was, you know, maybe three or four of them throughout the series.
Right.
But, you know, they had this one. It was perfect. You know, it was just like the perfect buy-in for me. And it went all right. You know, I felt comfortable. I did well in the tournament. I didn't cash or anything, but – I never felt like I was outclassed or anything like that. So I then...
Now, was this still at Binion's or had it moved
here? This was
here?
At Binion's. Yeah, this is when it was at Binion's. So that was a cool experience. You know, I'm glad that I got to be a part of the Binion's era because, you know, the Rio has its thing. You know, it's this gigantic poker room and that's good, I guess. But Binion's just had this totally different... feel about it.
A mystique.
Yeah, exactly. It's old school place, you know, all these legends played there. And that was a pretty cool experience just to even just be a part of that. And then, you know, a couple days later I played in the $3,000 Pot Limit Omaha, Pot Limit Hold'em event and ended up winning. And not only did I get to do it at Binion's, but I throughout the tournament I played with Johnny Chan, Phil Hellmuth, TJ Cloutier, you know, all these current legends of the game at the time, and that was a really cool experience. Well, I busted Johnny Chan, I busted Phil Hellmuth. You know, I mean, this is my second ever World Series event. The first time I've ever been to Las Vegas, and I'm playing against these guys, and you know, beating them.
Do you remember the hands?
Cool. Yeah, Johnny Chan moved in for like 14 big blinds or something like that, and I called him with two queens. That one was basic.
Yeah.
I played a really big hand with TJ Cloutier with about 17 people left or so. We're just inside the money. He raises on the button, and it's pot limit hold'em. So he made it three times a big blind. So then I made it nine times a big blind from the big blind. And he then raised the pot again. And I moved all in. I had ace king. I moved all in, and he says, "Oh well," he goes, "I call, but I like his hand." You know, he turned over the king nine offsuit, and you know, my hand held up, so that propelled me to the chip lead. And then at the final table with seven people left, Phil Hellmuth was relatively short, and he limped from the small blind, and I checked the big blind with the king six of spades, and the flop was like jack 7-6, something like that, and with one spade, and he had, you know, 3.5 big blinds left, so we got all the money in, and he had middle pair. Whatever the middle pair was, he had it.
Uh-huh.
And I went running flush to knock him out. And then this is the tournament where he said, if it weren't for luck, I'd win them all.
Oh, yeah.
So I inspired some Phil Hellmuth greatness.
See, I when you told about the runner and the, you know, I know, obviously we knew you won the hand because you ended up winning the
right.
tournament.
Right.
I just was thinking to myself, was this the one that made him say that?
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure if he said it after he busted or if, you know, he did one of his walk over and talking to the camera things.
Yeah.
And did it that time. But
oh, I'm sure he did it to a camera.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I talked to him the other day about it because we're both working with WSOP Academy right now. And he's like, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but the tournament that you busted me at your final table when you won the bracelet, that's when I said, if it weren't for luck, I guess I'd win them all. And he said, I didn't even realize the camera was on me at the time.
Oh.
And I'm not entirely sure I believe him.
I don't believe him at all.
But, you know, it was the beginning, you know, sort of the beginning of televised poker. So maybe he didn't really realize that because he said it was on break or something like that. He didn't realize that the camera was going to follow him when he's talking to his sister. But,
yeah, well.
You know, Phil's
Phil is Phil.
Phil always knows where the camera is, it seems like.
Absolutely. Wakes up in the morning and looks for it.
Yeah, that's right. He probably just has one hanging around, you know.
There's a webcam in his house.
Why not? So he can practice.
Yeah. Well, that's great that you won it that year and that you remember those guys being in it. I wonder if you'd remember those hands if it was just, you know, Joe Schmo who you beat in a pot, you know. Well, there were 17 guys left, and I did this, and this guy I never heard of or saw before did that. It's different when you're beating TJ and Johnny and Phil,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. In fact, Phil asked me about a hand that he wasn't sure I would remember, and I remembered it, where he laid down ace-king preflop to me, which, you know, he would never do these days. But And I told him, this is the first time we've ever talked about this hand. I told him I had ace 10, which I did. You know,
no.
I remember that hand specifically because I raised, he 3-bet me, and this is like second or third time he 3-bet me, and nobody really, in 2004, people weren't 4-betting light.
Right.
It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, nobody did it.
Right.
So I 4-bet light. And so I 4-bet light with the ace 10. And so then Steve Zolotow and I don't remember who the other person was. Oh, it was Ken Flayton. Steve Zolotow and Ken Flayton were basically, so Phil was in one seat and they were on either side of him. Mm-hmm. And they start talking about, Steve Zolotow talks all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start talking about something that they had some sort of disagreement or whatever. And they're talking back and forth. And Phil starts, he starts throwing a rant because they're talking while he's making this decision. I was a little upset because I thought it might drive him to call me.
Yeah.
You know, I started to get a little nervous.
Yeah.
But, you know, he ended up folding. Luckily for me, he ended up folding.
Yeah.
That actually is a little bit of some of the etiquette of tables, and I noticed it among some of the novice. I ran into that in one of the tournaments I played over at the Venetian Deep Stack. And I wasn't involved in the hand, thank goodness, but a gentleman made a bet, and another one had pushed out a rebet on it, a re-raise. And a guy not in the hand at all, guy sitting over here, they're both thinking about it. He says, well, why don't you take it out the two pots, even so he can see exactly what he's got to call. Sitting there wondering, jeez, you can't do that. Come on, guy.
And just don't ever get involved too much if you're not in the pot. You know, I obviously if someone's doing something wrong, then that's fine. But that's pretty bad to ask them to cut out the bet amount.
Although I'm more of a cash game player, and I've been at tables where for some reason you got a bad dealer, and somebody makes a bet, and the dealer counts it out wrong.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's different.
That's definitely different. Yeah.
And you're sitting next to me going, no, it's not 7:30, it's 8:75, whatever it is.
Well, yeah.
In that situation, I'll always correct it because if the dealer's giving bad information, then that's different. You know, because that sort of information can change the person's decision. Whereas in this instance, there's no reason to get involved in what's going on in the hand because if the other player in the hand doesn't want the raise cut out, then there's no reason for you to want the raise cut out because you have no bearing on the hand.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, whether he wants to entice the caller, he wants to get the guy to fold that he's bluffing, it doesn't make any difference. If he wants to do this, it's his call, not yours on the side.
Right.
I mean, little things. Like, I hate it when I ask to see somebody's chips or get a chip count on it, and the guy next to him tells it to me. Shut up, guy. I want to see his reaction. I want to tell him, find out if he's estimating higher or lower, how he's going to react.
You want to hear the tone of his voice and everything.
Well, yeah. Sometimes I really don't care what the chips are.
Yeah. There are some instances where I'll tell the guy, hey, you... he's asking you, right?
If they haven't
heard you or something like that. But it's bad to just – it's sort of bad to just get involved in a hand that you're not involved
in. It really
is.
It really is.
Unless you see a specific – like someone asks the dealer how many chips is it and it's wrong like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Then it's different. But if you're not in the hand in general – don't get involved.
Yeah. And it's most of the time, as you describe him, the ABC poker player, the guy that has a king in his hand, he sees a king on the board, therefore he's going to bet, and he doesn't care about chips, he doesn't care about position, any kind of a thing like that. Those are the guys that then, and maybe they're just trying to be helpful, but just stay out of the hand. It's just simple poker etiquette, you know.
Yeah.
There is a reason why I'm probably asking for your chip count or something.
Absolutely.
So,
speaking of ABC poker players, we know you're involved with WSOP Academy. You mentioned you and Helmuth and I think Greg Raymer's involved in it. And
It's basically the main people involved these days, Greg Raymer, Phil Hellmuth, Annie Duke, Mark Safe, Mark Gregorich, Ali Najad.
I think Bernard Lee is involved
Bernard
in
Lee's
it too.
Involved. Yeah. So we've got some stuff coming up. Just go to WSOPacademy.com and you can see all the things coming up. It's World Series time, so lots of people are trying to get out here and play some of these events, and they need a little help. So mm-hmm. we're trying to help them out.
Yeah. Now, I didn't mean to imply that everybody who goes to the academy is an ABC player, but you do get people who are coming who are beginners, and they're playing in small tournaments or small 1-2, 1-3 cash games, and they want to make their game better. We talk all the time on the show about tells, and how beginning players especially pay no attention to the other players at the table. Is this something you guys talk about at the academy and try to teach?
Well, Joe Navarro is part of the academy.
Oh,
so,
the best.
So, yeah, he obviously, I don't talk about it. I let him talk about it. So you know, the way the academies work is you come and you work with the pros on your individual game. You know, we'll deal out some hands and they'll play a hand and they'll say, okay, this is what you're doing wrong. But then they also go to seminars where we talk about math or we talk about, you know, tournament strategy. Or Joe Navarro does his body language speech. Sam Shahan does his mindset coaching. So there's a lot of different facets to the WSOP Academy.
And what's your speech about?
My speech is, I'm not sure if I'm going to – it kind of changes, you know. So usually it's about closing tournaments, you know, finishing, which used to be my specialty. But these days I just finish third and second all the time. So.
Well, a question for you, because it's got to be difficult. Uh-huh. You have a broad spectrum of people out there. So I got two questions for you. First of all, how do you teach to a broad spectrum? Do you pick a middle of the road and try and do it that way on it? And second of all, if you're recommending to people, do you recommend the novice that really doesn't have any experience go to the WSOP Academy, or should he get some experience first and become a little more relaxed, a little more efficient, and then come to it?
As far as teaching to a wide array of people, it's sort of supposed to be, you know, guidelines, and I usually do the more advanced clinics. There's basically like a beginner, there's beginner academies, mm-hmm. and there's advanced academies, and I'm usually involved in the advanced academies. Mm-hmm. So those people have a little more experience, but, you have to adjust your teaching style to fit the people that you're teaching. And we do a lot of one-on-one or one-on-five work, mm-hmm. Or one-on-eight work. That it makes it easier to adjust to doing each individual's personality. Okay. As far as whether they should get some experience, like I said, there is a beginner's academy, there is an advanced academy, there's cash game academy. There's all these different ways that you can get involved, and so you don't really need to have a lot of experience. You should probably know the rules of the game, and you should probably have played some amount of poker. But, you know, you can come in fresh off the street and learn something. You probably won't learn as much as if you already have some experience.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Without us paying academy tuition, tell us a little bit about closing a tournament.
Well, basically,
I say that because I've got four caches this year, no wins.
You know, one of the things that I really stress is always paying attention and realizing which players you can take advantage of and which players you can't take advantage of. So, for instance, you've got a guy who is trying to blind down. He's trying to make the final table because it's his first time playing the World Series, right? And he really wants to make that WSOP final table. Or even earlier in the tournament where you've got you're getting towards the end of the day and they want to make day two, right? It's the main event. They want to make day two. You know, you can pick on that guy. Mm-hmm. These are the kind of things that I'm sort of stressing. And then also, I'm not sure if I want to go too much into depth, but basically realizing how much the payout structure is going to impact each individual player and, you know, Even if you're trying to win the tournament, it is important to be aware of the payout jumps even if you're not like taking that into account for yourself, you should take into account for the players that you're playing against.
I got to tell you, this is such a great point because you see people in tournaments towards the end after they've gotten into the money, the bubble has burst and now everybody's in the money, and they keep looking up at that board and they realize, you know what, if I could just outlast two more people, I can make $300 more or $3,000 more, and they're looking up and they're doing that. Or as you say, they're trying to stick around for day two, or I want to get to the final 18. For whatever reason, and that's their motive,
right?
Not necessarily trying to win the tournament. Or they'd like to do that, but they're not playing to win. They're playing to just move up the ladder, get a couple more dollars before they can go home.
Right, and not even just winning. The real objective of any tournament poker player, yes, you want to win the tournament, but you want to maximize your EV at any given time. So, yeah, it might be two spots until there's a pay jump, but there's also higher pay jumps after that, and you need to be aware of of how much money you can make and how much your stack is worth and all these things. So you definitely need to be paying attention to a lot of those things.
Well, yeah, and going along with what you're saying, even some people right before dinner break, the hand or two, they don't want to bust right then, or the very last the hour of the day, they don't want to do that. But there's another aspect of this, too. If somebody gets a little short stacked and it's toward the end of the day, they have the attitude they don't want to come back with a short stack. They want to either double up or get out of it.
Yep.
Yeah, and I've been guilty of that before.
We all have, unfortunately.
I had to have Dennis give me a huge pep talk at one of the tournaments earlier this year because I called him and I said, you know what, there's like an hour left in the day. We're on this break. We're going to come back and play for another hour. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm really short stacked here, and I think I'm just going to shove if I get anything decent. He says, don't do that. Just play good poker. And, you know, if you come back for day two and you're short stacked, you never know. You might just get great cards. You might get in great situations. You might be able to. Don't just give up at this point.
Right.
I mean, he gave me a fantastic pep talk about that. And, of course, I made it to day two and then made it to nearly to the final table.
Yeah. But it is. Those chips are so precious. And I see that at different times where it's a bubble or a dinner break or the end of the night or something. There's weak spots and you have the two extremes there. The guy that wants to get chips or get the heck out of there and the ones that wants to do no matter what, he wants to last another day.
Yeah.
And there is some merit to, at the World Series at least, mm-hmm. to being okay with busting towards the end because there's another tournament the next day. Like say for instance, you have three or four big blinds. That stack isn't worth as much as your starting stack in the tournament the next day. So you know, then you can sort of gamble or whatever. But that's for people who are playing every day and playing a lot of different tournaments.
Right.
You know, you have to be sort of aware of how much your stack is worth at any given time.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I guess I can say this on here. At the Mohegan Sun, in their main event, I was fairly short stacked. It's getting down late in the day. That was on a Saturday. On Sunday is the main event of the Scoop for Poker Stars. That I would miss if I made it a day two. Mm-hmm.
This wasn't a Mohegan Sun. This was at Foxwoods.
Oh, that's Foxwoods.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that was at Foxwoods on the one. So, I tried a major bluff on a guy who I happen to have pocket aces. So, you know, it worked real well. But anyhow.
He didn't lay him down?
He didn't lay him down. It's amazing. But it didn't make any difference. I got knocked out of that one, but I went in the scoops and I cashed in the scoop main event, so that was all good. And you're exactly right. That's another aspect. If somebody's playing against you or me or who knows who, and he knows that they're going to go on and they're not going to want to be short stack going into day two, well, shoot, you can take advantage of them.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you always have to be aware of what. This is going to sound bad. You always have to be aware of how you can take advantage of another player's mental state or situation in life or all these things. And you know, unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't sound so great, but it's a truth in poker. You're looking for whatever edge you can find within the bounds of the rules.
Yep.
And you should take it. Yeah.
Well, everybody, I'm telling you, I've said this before, the caliber of players has come up so much in the last few years.
Oh,
there are so many really, really solid and even great players. Any advantage you can get over them, I don't give a dang what it is, you should take it.
Yeah.
You've got to you've got to improve your points everywhere, whether it's chip stack or position or whatever. I always tell everybody that they always seem to look and follow the action around to the till it comes to you. If you look behind, you can see tells, you can see pick up things. If you look to the left, people haven't acted yet. You have these guys that are already, they've given up on the hand, or they're counting out chips, or they're whatever. I mean, just so obvious.
Yep.
And you miss those if you're not careful.
Yeah, for sure. Like people who you know are going to fold behind because they're holding their hand out, and you can they're already mid-fold when it's two people away from acting, or they have 300 chips in their hand, the blinds are 50 and 100, you know, then you realize that someone wants to play that hand for a raise. So maybe you fold your, you know, Jack 10 offsuit or whatever that you don't want to be playing against someone out of position with. So there's definitely a lot of things that you really have to pay attention to these days, especially because people are just, you're right, people are so much better than they were 3 years ago. It's just night and day.
You're the button. You see the big blind's giving up on the hand, going to do it. You only have the small blind to worry about.
Right.
And then he wakes up with aces. But, you know, that goes. But you got to take advantage of all of it.
Absolutely. Well, Gavin, we appreciate your time today. We wish you the best of luck this summer.
Thank
have a
you.
Great series.
I'll try.
I guess it's impossible for you to go back and become the youngest guy to do anything ever again. Because now that Kat has done that, he was 21 in an hour or whatever he was. He won that. Nobody will ever be able to beat that, I don't think. But good luck with the rest of your series, and thanks for coming and joining us.
Thank you very much.
Gavin Griffin joining us here at the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast on theshipleader.com.
Tuesday is poker day on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and this is The Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the 2010 World Series of Poker, brought to you by Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel.
Welcome back to the show here at the Dennis Phillips Suite high atop the Rio at the 2010 World Series of Poker. We're joined by a guy who sat with Dennis at the final table of the November 9, the first ever November 9 in 2008. Chino Ream is here.
How you doing?
Great. Nice to have you
here. Thanks for having me here, guys.
Have you guys played together at a table since November 2008?
We've actually have.
Yeah.
We've played over in London. We've played some other places like that. It's been fun. And a lot of people don't realize it, but we had that 117-day break.
Yeah.
And there was a group of us. They were all sponsored with Poker Stars and around there, and even the ones that weren't. And we got to know each other rather well during that time.
We basically all went and played like WSOP Europe and Barcelona and whatnot. We just went and traveled all over there and played all the tournaments before our final table.
Yeah. But it really was. It was quite an experience, and we got to be good friends, and the experiences we live will never forget. It was just awesome.
Yeah.
And then we had to also do all the other junk that went along with it. Yes, we're doing 6 more interviews this morning. Yes, we're, all this
really
other stuff.
I really hated that, by the way.
Yeah. That was part of it, and it wasn't the part any of us enjoyed that much necessarily.
Right.
But, again, we at least got to commiserate together sometimes, too.
Yeah.
And for all the people that are listening, every time I played with Dennis on my table, he owned me.
No,
just to let everybody know, he basically just owned me every single hand we played together. That's quite all right.
It's not quite true, but thank you anyway.
You seem to have done okay despite that,
Yeah.
And your 2010 got off to a pretty good start here in Las Vegas, didn't it?
Well, right before the World Series, they had a grand opening million-dollar free-roll tournament at the Aria, and Phil Ivey. It was Phil Ivey's tournament, and he had a $100,000 bounty on his head, and I just happened to be that lucky man, fortunate enough to get that bounty.
Tell us about the hand.
You weren't going after him, were you, because of the $100,000?
Let's just say I moved in blind when he moved in, so that can give you the answer for that.
No, tell us about the hand.
I believe the blinds were 500, 1,000, so he had like 10 big blinds. He had 10,000. Like, the structure was kind of bad. It was a crapshoot. The structure went up real fast.
A shove fest?
Yeah, basically. And, it went from like, you started with 10,000, and the blinds were at 100, 200. So, that should let you know right there.
Yeah.
But, he was under the gun, and he moved in for 10,000 under the gun, and I just moved in behind without looking at my cards. I had him covered, which was good, obviously.
Wow.
And the next person behind me looked at his cards, and he moved in, and then there was a short stack. It's kind of goofy for the short stack to call because he can't get the bounty because he doesn't have Ivy covered.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
But he called anyways, and then the hands were flipped over. Ivy had 2 fives. The gentleman to my left had ace-king, and the short stack had queen-eight of hearts. I squeezed my cards, and I had the jack-three off suit.
Uh-huh.
And the flop came 9-4-3, and the turn was gin. The turn was a three. And so only Ivy was drawn live with 2 fives. He had a 2-outer, but he missed.
Uh-huh.
And, it was a good start right before the World Series. I got lucky, and I got a $100,000 bounty.
Very, very nice.
Yep.
How'd you end up doing in the rest of the tournament? Or did it not matter at that point?
It didn't matter at that point, to be honest with you. I was very happy to just win that bounty. But there was like 300 people in the tournament. I got down to like 60 or something. The blinds went up so fast. It was like, because I won that massive pot. It was like a 4-way pot, and I had everyone covered except for the guy on my left. So, I went from, I forgot what it was, but I had, 50,000 after the hand, which was a lot at that time because there were still, 200 people left or something.
Yeah.
And the blinds went up real fast, and I got, stuff happens. But, I'm not complaining at all, you know what I mean? I went there, and I got a bounty, which it's a free-roll tournament. You're not going there to think, whenever you play a free-to-roll tournament, you don't go in there with the mindset I'm going to win because it's a crapshoot and it's just it's a different form of poker. It's a way more gamble instead of like trying to play solid and there's not enough play and et cetera. And, you know, I was happy to get a bounty. Like, that's almost first place right there. So
mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your life been like for the last year and a half when it comes to deciding what you're going to play? Are you a cash game player or have you just been doing tournaments? What have you been doing?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I won a lot of money in 2008. I made the final table, and then after that, I had a lot of confidence. I was playing with like the most confidence I've ever had in my life, and I went on to win like a WPT after that. I won a lot of money.
Yep.
And then, you know, for the people who don't know, I do have a tad bit of gamble in my blood, so there was a little degeneracy there, and you know, I've been known to fire off a lot of money, which I did. I've made a lot of mistakes, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a lot of that money, just, you know, that's to be as blunt as I can. I went through a lot of that money. So the last year and a half, honestly, it hasn't been that. It's not like what everyone thinks it is, like what, you know, they see Chino Remo on TV.
Yeah.
I went through a lot of that money, and you know, just. You have to learn, and I learned the hard way.
Well, but I tell you, and Mike Manasau, we talked to him, we had an interview up with that. He said if somebody wants to go on the circuit, they've got to realize you're going to spend somewhere between $500,000 and $700,000 in a year if you pay the major tournaments and you do the buy-ins and your expenses and everything like that. It is very, very expensive to go on this and to play in these major tournaments. You have to be successful, and you have to continue to be successful.
Right.
Or you can go through money so easy and so quick.
Right.
It's, believe me, you've got a lot of company on that.
Right.
And it's not just the tournament entry fees. There's the travel.
Right.
There's
the
hotel.
Right,
there's the expenses.
Exactly.
There's, you know, maybe you got a sports betting league or a craps league.
Right.
Or all that
or
sort of stuff.
Or one of those type of leagues.
A lot of us have been through those, so we completely understand those.
The nice thing about it, though, it is a learning experience. You know you're one of the better players around, and you're going to start winning again.
Right.
And so, you know, you've learned, you move on.
And you just do
there
it again.
There you go.
Exactly.
Did that affect your game?
I think it did, personally, yeah. Like, you know, when you go from, you know, winning millions of dollars and then having to, you know, try to find out, like, figure out what event you're going to play next. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mentally it really does affect you. Like my confidence was way down as opposed to in 2008 my confidence was sky high.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, personally I do think it mentally affected me, but right now, you know, we started off this summer real good, so the kid is back, so we'll see what happens.
That's actually a good question. Confidence, what role does that play in a poker player?
Confidence is for me personally it's just so key. Like coming off the main event final table when I won the Bellagio, like, I had so much confidence. I basically called all my chips off with ace high when there was, like, three tables left, like, on the river. And it was good. Like, that's how confident I was. And, like, I think right now today, even if I think I'm good, I won't do that today because I just don't want to risk it. But 2 years ago, I went with my gut and, you know, it was right. But it's like it plays a big role because you just – Every decision you make, you're not, like, regretting it or double-thinking it or just – you're just like, okay, this is what I think and this is what I'm going to go with. And it just – it happened to be right every time and you just feel real good about it. You know, like, for any poker player out there, like, when you're playing good and your confidence is sky high and everything you do when you take your time, whether you decide to just call here or raise here or whatever it is or fold – and you just feel good about it every time. It's just, you know, you feel like you're unstoppable. And that's how I felt.
One of the things about confidence that always has been a problem for me, and probably still is to this day, is affecting how I'm reading the other players. You know, it's not a matter of do I want to fire the three-barrel bluff here. It's I think I see what I think I see, but I'm not acting on it because for some reason I don't have the confidence to go with that read anymore.
Right.
As opposed to those days where you're playing fantastically and you can actually tell yourself, wow, you're really on your game today.
Right,
and
exactly.
That you're making every decision right, you're making every read right, and you're acting on it properly.
Right.
Those times when you're not doing it or you've had a bad run, you know, you go in 2 months without a win and 3 months go by and 4 months go by and you're just bleeding money and making bad decisions. And now you come to one of those crossroads hands that comes up in a cash game or in a tournament or whatever it is, and you look at that guy and you go, I really think I have the best hand here, but then you don't act on it.
Right. And that's the thing. In 2008, I acted on it every time.
Yeah.
If I felt I had the best hand, I called. And by golly, I had the best hand, you know? And it's just like, I, you know, to be honest, I don't have that that confidence I did in 2008. And, you know, I think it's going to come back. Like, I'm not saying, like, I'm playing scared. Like, I feel real good about this summer and this World Series. It's just that 2008 at coming off the final table, like, I've never felt that good in my poker career. And, you know, it'll come back. You know, it's just you have to get that win. You have to get another win under your belt to, like, feel good like that. Or just, you know, get a deep run in something or, you know, and it's just – and then that's what it takes to, like, for me to personally get it back.
We've all, and I'm telling you, we've talked about this again in some other interviews. I think Chris Ferguson last year played 20-some events and never cashed.
Right.
And
right.
Nobody doubts his, you know, credit in the way the guy plays. Right. But there are just bad runs. And what bugs me sometimes, you get fairly deep in a tournament and then maybe you lose a race or you lose two races and the chip stack that you had dwindles down. And now you get that pocket eights and you have to play it different than you want.
Right.
You have no choice.
Right.
And it just... it sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, why didn't my ace king hold up or my pocket tens hold up or something? Then I wouldn't have to be playing these eights this
way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or you start telling yourself, they always hit 2 and 3 outers on me. I never hit them on them. And you know what? You were making the right moves and the deck just got you. That's
What can you do? There's nothing you could do about that.
Right. Yeah. That's the way poker is.
Yeah. Again, last year, the 5K shootout, I get heads up on the shootout. I look down at pocket queens and the guy across the table shoves from me. I couldn't have smiled any bigger if you know, no matter what. It's like, yes, wow, great. He turns over king eight. Flop, right on the window, a king.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yep.
What can you do?
Yeah, that's just poker. It happens, so you move on.
Yeah.
Right. So.
So what's your plan for the summer, for the series?
Well,
what are you going to be playing?
My plan is to play as many events as I can and just do as best as I can, and that's it. And
you're
we'll just go from there.
Get some of the other games, PLO,
yeah.
Raz, Deuce to Seven, any of those things?
Well,
stick with No Limit.
Stud High is like probably my worst game, but I feel like I'm pretty fairly well-rounded in mm-hmm. all the other games, like Triple Draw, Raz, Omaha High Low, PLO, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So, yeah, I'm going to try to play as much as I can.
Is there one you have more fun with?
Yeah, I probably have the most fun in, like, Deuce through Seven, Triple Draw. It's just, it's an action game, you know?
It's
like, it's all complete action and drawing, and you could snow and just, you know, you have the Deuce 3-4-7 and someone's pat, and there's, like, three people in the pot, and then you squeeze a little five right here, and you just make a win. It's just fun. It's just an action game. You know, like, No Limit, it's fun, but it could get real boring, you know what I mean? Like, you just sit there. And it's fun and it's a good game, don't get me wrong, but it can get boring when you're playing it for hours and hours and hours. You're playing Deuce to Seven, like, every hand just seems to be fun. You never know what you're going to make. You never know what you're going to squeeze. And just, to me, it's fun for me because it's more of a sweat.
Mm-hmm. I got addicted to the Deuce to Seven. I love playing it now. I'm probably going to play it here. The other one that gets me for some reason, it's a stupid game, but I love it, is Raz.
Yeah, I mean...
It's a stupid game.
I can't
game.
Agree with you more. It's the most retarded, dumb, stupidest game that I've ever played in my life. Like, it's just... It really is, like, the dumbest, most annoying, most frustrated game.
Then why do we play it? Because I agree.
Because it's so simple. It's just, like, it's so simple, it's so ABC, but it's just... It could be so, so frustrating because you start with, like, the ABC, and the guy has, like, an 8-up... And then he catches a 9, and you catch a 10, and, you know, you can't fold because you know you're going to draw smooth. And then you catch a 5, and he catches a 7, and, you know, it's just like, whatever. Like, that game is the most frustrating poker game of all, but, like, it's very simple to play. I mean, it's just very ABC.
Will you play it here at the series?
Maybe. Probably not. You know why? I'm going to be honest. The reason why I probably won't play it is because, like, as simple as it is to play, it's just you have to have a lot of patience and discipline to play that game. And me knowing myself personally, if I start with like the 4, 5, 6 and I catch a queen and a king and they improve 2 times, I'm too stubborn. I won't fold and I will want to improve one more time just to try to suck out again. And because I started with the best hand. Sometimes you start with the best hand, we got to let it go right away.
Yeah.
And Raz, you know, you have to just pitch it.
Right.
And I'll get stubborn and I know myself. So it's just like it's not worth putting up that money if I know that I'm not going to play as solid as I should.
Was 08 your first time ever playing at the World Series?
No, my first time was in 05, I believe.
Tell us about your first time at the World Series. We're asking everyone we interview this summer to tell us about their first World Series experience. How did you get there? What did you play? What was it like, etc.?
Actually, you know what? My first year in the World Series, I did real well. It was like, I can't remember if it's three or four. I think I made 4 televised final tables in the World Series in my career. All my final tables were televised, and the first one was, it was a $1,000 rebuy my first year in the World Series. I came second to Alan Cunningham, and So, yeah, like, that was my first year in World Series. I did real good. And people don't really know, that was my first year playing the main event. I came 100 and something, like 163rd or something. It was the year that – who won first, Greg Raymer or Joe Hatcham?
In what year?
Greg Raymer?
In 04 was Greg Raymer.
Yeah, okay.
05
so it was
Hatcham.
It was the year that Greg Raymer won. That was my first year in the World Series.
Okay.
And I got 163rd in that main event. And people don't know this. The blinds were 2,500, 5,000. And I had I was second in chips on my table. And I had like over 300,000. And someone makes it 20,000 under the gun. And a kid, two people behind him, moves all in, and he's the only person that has me covered. And I looked in at two black aces. So it's, and there's like seven people behind him, and he just moves in. And so, okay, so now fold is up to, I call. Everyone folds. The initial under the gun raiser thinks forever and says he folded queens, which I believe him, obviously. Yeah. He folds. And this young kid flips over ace-king offsuit, and I have two black aces. And Robert Mizrahi and Hassan Habib, they both bought a piece of me in the main event, and they were both standing right behind me. And when I called before the hands were flipped over, Hassan Habib said, "What do you got, buddy?" And I says, "What do you think I got? Like, I just called this man's all-in. Like, it's either kings or aces." And he's like, "Okay." But obviously it was two black aces. And the flop came jack-10-3. And I didn't even look, and I heard my friend Robert say, "Oh, my God, I'm so sorry." When the turn card was dealt, it was a queen. And the gentleman under the gun had said he folded two queens. So it's so sick. And I could have chopped with the king on the river. Yeah, it didn't come. Like that was my first year in the World Series, and I made it. I had a deep run in that main event, and I lost with aces versus ace king. That's probably, like, if you think about it, like, as compared to, like, when Peter Eastgate knocked me out with ace king versus ace queen, still, I think those aces versus ace kings were, like, my worst beat ever. Even though, like, I was on the main event final table, I was short in chips, whatever, but, like, that probably, in my poker career, is probably the worst beat I've ever had. Was aces versus ace king, my first in 04 in the main event of the World Series.
How do you recover from something like that?
What can you do? You can't. I'm pretty much known to always take beats well. So, like, it's like, the way I look at it is, like, there's nothing you can do. You know, it's like, I'm the first one to admit I suck out on people all the time. I get it in bad and I get lucky all the time. So it's like, hey, when someone gets lucky on me, what are you going to do? It's a game, you know? It's a sport and a game that we play. You can't control it. You can't control what cards come. So you just, for anyone who plays poker, you have to have that mindset to understand, like, don't let it get to your head. Don't let it affect you, which I'll be completely honest. That year in the main event, I let it get to my head. There were some hands that I played that I was playing bad when there was, like, two tables left, and I was paying people out. Like, when that gentleman had quad sixes on me and I rivered a flush, like, I was playing completely retarded, spewy bad, and you know, I let it get to my head, but then I buckled down. I told myself, look, you didn't come all this way to not make this final table, you know? So it's just like, I mean, I got there, you know? It happened, but, you know, when you take beats, you got to take it in stride.
It's part of poker.
Yeah, it's part of poker.
I mean, the best you can hope for pre-flop is to be an 80-20 favorite.
Exactly.
That means you're still going to lose 20% of the
exactly.
time, guys.
Exactly.
And you know five what? Times, boom, exactly. you lose one.
And you know what? You always remember the 20%. You never remember the 80% yeah. where you right. got it in with aces against his queens. No queen came. You took the pot down. You never tell right. that story.
Yeah.
That's not the one that after your buddies go up to you, hey, tell me your hand from the tournament. Oh, yeah, I had ace against queens and I won.
Yeah, you only remember the ones that you lose because they're the critical ones because, like, all poker players, they wait for those spots where they're a 4-to-1 favorite. That's when they love to get their money in. You just
sure.
wait to get your money in, and when you see the hand, you're like, yes, I'm a 4-to-1 favorite. Let's go. And then when you lose those, you're like, ouch, you know?
Yeah.
What can you do?
This year, Kevin Schaffel, pocket aces. Gets it in against Eric Buckman, who has pocket kings, who, to give him credit, took forever to call.
Yeah,
He sat there and said, I just can't lay it down. I just can't do it. And he called, catches the – well, he caught quads, but, you know, didn't make any difference.
Right.
If that had not come, if Kevin had won it, he'd been second in chips behind Darvin at that time of the tournament, who knows what would have happened.
Yep.
Total change. As it is, nobody remembers Kevin finishing seventh.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Well, good luck. Get yourself a bracelet this year, for goodness sake.
That's the plan. That's the plan.
And have a great summer. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Chino Ream joining us here at the final table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. And our podcast available on thechipleader.com.
This portion of our show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the group that Dennis and I are members of, and you should be too. They make it easy now with an iPhone application you can download for just 99 cents, a buck, to help out the PPA. Or if you want to help out more, then go to the website this Thursday and be part of the $25,000 fundraising drive. You can join for $5, $10, $15, $20, $25, $100, whatever it is. It'll help out fighting for the game we love in courthouses, state houses, and in Congress as well. Go to thePPA.org, or if you have an iPhone or an iPad, download the iPhone app from the iTunes store. That's the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance. For Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. Next week, we're both at the main event of the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas. This is the Final Table from Harris St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.